This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
This is a federation which gathers up some 26,000 hotels and restaurants across the country. They have actually met with the minister in charge of tourism and asked for a specific dispensation for them, saying that they need workers. In fact, they need 130,000 workers in restaurants and hotels across the country.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. We'll have full details on this story coming up.
Also, vaccinations are expected to begin this week to help stem the latest Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC. And Kenya and Tanzania are marking the 20th anniversary of the bombings of the U.S. embassies in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam that killed up to 240 people.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Kenya and Tanzania are marking the 20th anniversary of the nearly simultaneous bombings of the U.S. embassies in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam that killed up to 240 people and wounded nearly 5,000. Security is tight across Kenya for the commemoration ceremonies of the country's worst terror attack. The U.S. ambassador, Kenyan government officials, and survivors of the truck bombings are attending. It wasn't the first attack by al-Qaeda, but it was the terror group's largest at the time, cementing a reputation for death and destruction. Other brazen assaults followed, including the 9/11 attacks in the U.S. 3 years later. The U.S. State Department issued a statement that called for honoring the memory of those who died by pressing for freedom and justice. It also says continued vigilance is needed to prevent future attacks. VOA's Mohammed Yusuf is in Nairobi, where he talked with some of those affected by the bombings.
This picture happened in 1994. Tulipata huu mtoto wetu firstborn.
Pamela Olum was in the hospital the day of the embassy bombing. 3 days earlier, she gave birth to her third child.
So ndio alikuja tarehe 7 asubuhi, tulikuwa na yeye saa 3 hospitalini.
She says her husband came to see her at the Mater Hospital and to pay the bill. He gave her 5,000 shillings for her 17,000 shilling bill and left for the bank to get the rest of the money. Olum says he left and she never saw him again. Lawrence Olum was one of the people killed on August 7, 1998, when al-Qaeda exploded truck bombs in front of the U.S. embassies in Nairobi and in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. The attacks killed a total of 224 people and injured nearly 5,000. On Tuesday, about 200 people, including survivors, gathered at a memorial park in Nairobi to honor the victims of the attack and offer prayers. Participants lighted candles and laid flowers as a sign of remembrance. Teddy Giannopoulos came to honor her 51-year-old sister, who worked at the U.S. Embassy at the time of the bombings.
There isn't a day that we can forget her. She's very much alive in our minds, but this day is a very painful day for all of us, her family, her children, her grandchildren now, which she didn't get to see, of course.
Kenya National Counterterrorism Center Director Martin Kimani says his country still faces the threat of terrorism.
Kenya was injured in an extraordinary way 20 years ago. And today, 20 years later, Kenya remains threatened by terrorism and terrorists. But our country has taken giant strides to prepare better, to be more ready.
Despite the deaths and violence meted on the embassy staff and innocent people, U.S. Ambassador Robert Godek said, in the midst of evil carried out by terrorists, he saw humanity.
At the same moment, the moment of terrible terror, that atrocity, the attack, we also saw great heroism. We saw so many embassy staff, Kenyans, people coming together to help rescue those who were injured, to help retrieve those who had been killed, to help to begin the process of rebuilding and working together.
For Pamela Olum, life has been difficult, but she survived the years to overcome the pain and educate our children. Her firstborn is a DJ, one is a university graduate, and the thirdborn was accepted into a top Kenyan university this year. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Human Rights Watch says Zimbabwe's security forces have been carrying out a crackdown on the opposition since protests followed last week's election. Diwa Mivanga, the group's Southern Africa director, says the arrests, beating and harassment show that the veneer of respect for human rights and democratic rule that President Emmerson Mnangagwa vowed is gone. At least six people were killed when security forces used live ammunition during protests over the slow pace of vote counting. Mnangagwa won just over half of the votes, avoiding a possible runoff election with Nelson Chamisa, head of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Alliance. Chamisa claims the balloting was rigged and says he will challenge the results in court. Human Rights Watch says it documented numerous cases of beating and harassment by soldiers in groups of 4 to 10 in several of Harare's high-density suburbs, which largely supported Chamisa. The Zimbabwe Defense Forces spokesperson, Oversen Mugwisi, denied any soldiers were involved in the alleged harassment.
The World Health Organization says vaccinations are expected to begin this week, perhaps as early as tomorrow, to help stem the latest Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC. WHO estimates put the number of confirmed and probable cases of Ebola at 43, including 34 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The WHO says the same expert team that led the vaccination program during a recent Ebola outbreak in Congo's Equator province will be deployed to the cities of Beni and Mangina in North Kivu province, where Ebola was detected last week. It says vaccinations in North Kivu will follow the same ring vaccination method. That means people most at risk of infection, such as health workers and first responders, will be vaccinated first. They will be followed by family members, neighbors, and other people identified as having come in contact with Ebola victims. Tracing contacts could be dangerous in North Kivu's highly insecure environment. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says some of the people exposed to the deadly Ebola virus might be living in conflict zones, and armed guards may have to be used to protect the health workers. He tells VOA that WHO personnel will have to work with UN peacekeeping forces known as MONUSCO.
For example, MONUSCO is sending, already sent some security in haste vehicles to Beni on August 5th, and we may need to use these sort of vehicles. But again, at this stage, we are trying really to do what is needed to be done. So the recommendation from the SAGE is to use ring vaccination.
Jazarevich says the World Health Organization and partners are working nonstop to contain and stop this latest outbreak of Ebola as quickly as possible. He says 30 WHO staff members have been deployed to the area and more experts are on the way. He says contact tracing has begun in affected zones. While more than 900 contacts have been registered in Mangina, he says this operation must be rapidly strengthened. He notes the cost of responding to this disease is likely to be significant, especially in view of the security situation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A federation of hotels and restaurants in France has petitioned the government to urgently grant a special status to illegal migrants. The move would allow them to work in various hotels and restaurants in the country. The federation, which includes unions, says their 26,000 members across the country have 130,000 jobs waiting to be filled, and they are ready to sign up and train the migrants right away. Reporter Catherine Field is covering these developments in France. She spoke with me about the unique proposal.
This is
is a federation which gathers up some 26,000 hotels and restaurants across the country. They have actually met with the minister in charge of tourism and asked for a specific dispensation for them, saying that they need workers. In fact, they need 130,000 workers in restaurants and hotels across the country. And they've asked specifically if illegal immigrants, these undocumented migrants, can be given special dispensation to work in their restaurants and hotels. Now, the problem for the restaurant owners is they know that they need staff, but they also know that these illegal migrants aren't allowed to work. On top of that, you're only allowed to work in France if you're a refugee once your paperwork comes through, or if 9 months after you've put in your paperwork, you apply for a job in a sector where there's a shortage. So on the one hand, you have this pool of labour ready to work. On the other, you have the tourism industry that says, look, we've got opportunities for unskilled labourers. We want to bring them in. We want to train them. We want to move them up within our sector. But we can only do that if the government helps.
What is the government saying so far?
They've said they will talk about it. The problem is, though, it's now summer here in France, and the restaurateurs and the hotel owners are saying, we've got tourists, we need you to make a quicker decision. So they're back on the phone, not just the hotel owners, but also the trade unions, because the trade unions know that the particular age and the skills that they're looking for, France just doesn't have anymore. You've got an aging population. You've got jobs that need to be filled by younger people. These are labour-intensive jobs. They're jobs where you need people who can do this work, sometimes standing up for hours on end, whether it be working in a kitchen or working in the hotels. We have this other group of people within the population. Sometimes it's figured as many as 300,000 illegal immigrants here in France. They say, we have these people here in France. This is a win-win situation. We can train them. They can send their remittances back home. And if they get these jobs, then they are developing a skill. And eventually, they will go home and they'll take that skill back to their home country.
Well, certainly this is a great opportunity for the illegal migrants. So what are they saying about the training and the job opportunities? Are they ready to be trained?
The trade unions here in France, which is specifically dealing with this, say they are ready to train these people. They're talking about entry-level jobs, but they are pointing out that this is a sector that does have opportunities for promotion. So, for example, you might start as a dishwasher, you might start as an extra in the kitchen, but this is a sector where you can move up. You can go from food preparation to chef de partie. Another thing the unions are saying is they know how many workers are there illegally in kitchens in France. It's a known fact that a lot of illegal migrants will use the ID papers for a cousin or some sort of relative or close friend and work under a false name. So they know this is happening. They just want to regularize a situation that is already operating on the ground.
The migrants, and they are just standing by waiting as well.
They are standing by waiting as well, and they are generally migrants who are fearful of coming forward because the chances of getting refugee status in France are very difficult. There's very specific, you have to be a victim of a conflict or political oppression. So that if you're an economic migrant or a climate migrant, then the chances are you aren't going to get that refugee status. But the chances are if you are here just for a short period of time and you're able to take that temporary job or even a permanent job in a hotel or a restaurant, you'll be able to do it and get some sort of training. And possibly, and this is what the unions are also pointing out, means they might actually get somewhere to live and not be living in these types of tent villages that are springing up around many French cities.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris.
19 past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Scientists in South Africa have found that sexual relationships between women as young as 15 and older men are driving the country's HIV crisis. South Africa has the biggest HIV epidemic in the world, with an estimated 7 million people living with the disease. The medical study focused on a part of KwaZulu-Natal province where one in four people is infected with HIV, one of the highest rates in the world. In the second part of a series on the new research, Darren Taylor reports on why the young women are risking their lives despite knowing the dangers of unprotected sex.
Okay, so how do you think you're going to disclose your status to your partner?
A nurse prepares to weigh a patient in a room in a hospital in Durban. Amehlo, as she wants to be called, smiles shyly as she explains that she currently has two boyfriends. One's her own age, the other's 8 years older than her.
Gambona, it's how we know Kal. Yeah.
We met in town for the first time and he said he loves me and he can do anything for me.
Amehlo is from Vulindlela, a rural settlement about 130 miles north of Durban. She says before she began a relationship with her older partner, life was very hard for her, her mother, and her two sisters. All are unemployed, and they'd often be hungry. But, says Amehlo, the bad days ended when she met her new boyfriend, who's a married professional.
Buy for me a new cell phone and clothes.
He bought me a cell phone, he buys me clothes, and sometimes anything that I want, I can ask him and he does it for me. He buys groceries, even for myself and for the whole family. Even if I'm going away, he gives money for the transport.
In South Africa, such older men are called blessers, because they bless their young girlfriends with money and other material goods. But there's something else Amehlo wants from her older partner, something that he refuses to give her, safe sex.
He says because he does everything for me, I cannot tell him to use condoms. Having sex without a condom makes me feel sad because I do not know his status. I do not want to tell the older one to use condoms because I'm afraid that he may stop doing all the nice things that he's doing for me.
She says her boyfriend's having sex with other women and she's terrified that soon he'll infect her with HIV.
This building cost almost R1 billion to build.
Professor Salim Karim is the director of the Center for the AIDS Program of Research in South Africa, or CAPRISA, in Durban. It's one of the most advanced HIV research facilities in the world. Karim says blessers have become culturally acceptable across South Africa.
If a 35-year-old knocked on my door to ask for a date with my teenage daughter, I'd kick his backside and send him packing. That person would not be welcomed in my house. It would not be welcomed in my community. It's a community norm. We would not accept that. I had to understand in the communities that I work in that it's actually perfectly fine.
This is Vulindlela, where Amehlo lives, and one of the communities that Karim's referring to. Most people here are poor. They live in mud huts or basic homes. CAPRISA scientists have found that more than 6 out of every 10 women older than 30 have HIV in Vulindlela. Gethwana Mahlase has worked as an HIV counselor here for almost 3 decades. She says poverty is the main reason for young women or girls having older boyfriends.
The blesser becomes the blesser for the family.
CAPRISA's research has shown that blessers are usually about 9 years older than their younger girlfriends. Mahlase agrees.
They can be as young as 25, also as young as 20, because a 20-year-old would have a sexual relationship with a 14-year-old girl.
Mahlase says the older men are typically working class, they don't earn much, so they don't give their younger partners lots of money. But, says Mahlase, the blessers are rich in danger. CAPRISA's investigation in Vulindlela shows women of about 30 are infecting men of about 30 with HIV. This is the very age group of men most likely to be blessers.
That's how they become the bridging population, transmitting HIV from older women to younger women, and they are a very effective bridge because they don't know they have HIV.
South Africa is treating 4 million HIV-positive individuals with pills to keep them alive. But, as Mahlase says, as long as poverty is pushing people to take risks, the country will fail to significantly decrease new infections. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Durban.
A new Gallup poll says roughly three-fourths of Gambians approve of new President Adama Barrow's leadership and express confidence in the election process. In January 2017, Barrow succeeded Yahya Jammeh, whose 22-year rule included arbitrary arrest, detention, and extrajudicial killings. Barrow has begun reforming the judicial system, freeing political prisoners, and declaring a moratorium on the death penalty. His government also has set up a Truth and Reconciliation and Reparations Commission looking into human rights violations during Jammeh's tenure. The country has struggled with high unemployment and high poverty rates, but Gallup says 65% of the poll's respondents said their living conditions are improving, the highest figure among the dozen ECOWAS countries surveyed. Still, Gallup says Barrow and his administration must not put too much stock in this goodwill, with respondents acknowledging difficulties over the past year in affording such basics as food and adequate lodging.
The UN Refugee and Migration Agencies have helped 116 Somali refugees return home from war-torn Yemen, although conditions in part of Somalia remain unsafe. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The boat, which sailed from Aden, Yemen on Saturday, arrived in the port of Berbera in Somalia the day after. Among its passengers were female heads of households, several students hoping to resume their educations, and a critically ill patient traveling with his family. Since the so-called Assisted Spontaneous Return Program began in 2017, the UN Refugee Agency, an international organization for migration, have helped more than 2,000 Somali refugees return to their homes of origin. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler says the Somali refugees are living under precarious conditions and, like the Yemenis themselves, are not receiving adequate aid and protection.
Refugees are vulnerable to early marriage, child labor, detention, and to the risk of dangerous onward movement. These circumstances have added to the urgent need for UNHCR to increase humanitarian support, mitigate risks, and find lasting solutions for these people.
Spindler tells VOA that UNHCR is not promoting returns to Somalia because they are not sustainable. But he says his agency is responding to demands from refugees for help to return home because the alternative of remaining in Yemen is worse.
From our perspective, the situation in Somalia is far from safe, but at the same time, Yemen, as we know, is facing the world's worst humanitarian crisis with outbreaks of disease, with food insecurity, and with an ongoing conflict that has displaced millions of people.
When the refugees arrive in Somalia, Spindler says they receive a cash grant and an allowance, as well as household items, food assistance from the World Food Program, and an education allowance for primary school children. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa,
Jean-Pierre Bemba, the former Democratic Republic of Congo vice president, is planning to run for president in the December election. Bemba's ICC war crimes conviction was recently overturned on appeal. Politics in the DRC on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.